Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Earth, and thank you for joining us once again here at Galactic Club. You are listening to Eric Totus Oak, Kelsey Lynn Brown, and Henry James Draper. And today we're going to be talking to our good friend, Keith Ranch. Would you like to say hi, Keith?
Hello, America. Hello to the world, actually.
Yes, yes. So let's get started today. Could you tell the listeners a little about yourself, Keith?
Well, I was a journalist and produced a lot of television shows in the late 80s and all through the 90s. It was investigative journalism, exposing a lot of government corruption and things of that nature. And then I did that for quite a long time, and then I got back into doing music because I've been a musician for a long time, and started an MTV-style show for a couple years. That was a lot of fun. I worked with some of the best musicians on the planet, one being Alan Holdsworth, who's considered one of the best electric guitar soloists of all time. He passed away last year, unfortunately, and when he passed away, Twitter just blew up, and I was getting calls for, like, months, and everyone from Sting to Eddie Van Halen and just about everybody in between called in, and it was a tragic loss, and so we're still reeling from that. He's been gone about a year. And then I toured the world shooting beauty pageants, Hawaiian Tropic pageants and Venus swimwear, and that was a lot of fun for quite a few years. And now I'm just been learning and teaching holistic medicine and oxygen therapies, and taking it from there, doing lots of photography for a while, and now watching all the craziness in the world unfolds almost on a daily basis. And that's just a short. One of my biggest achievements was exposing Area 51 in 1989. We started in on the world's first documentary on it, and took about a year to produce. It aired in, I think, 1990. And it kind of exploded from there. Movies and TV shows came out of it. And I think Kelsey, you've seen it, haven't you?
Yeah, all of us here have seen it. Henry's seen it. Eric may have seen it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the name of it?
It was titled UFOs on Earth Today, but it was basically there was a radio station out of Las Vegas called the Billy Goodman Happening, and it went into about 13 states and parts of Canada. And it was a talk show that it didn't surround UFOs, but one night my cameraman was listening to Billy talk, and Billy said something about MJ-12 documents, and he didn't know what that was. He thought it was an apple pie recipe. And he called in and set him straight, and then we were researching with William Cooper and a book called Behold a Pale Horse, and we were doing a lot of research for the book at the time, and we got Bill, who was a Naval Intelligence Briefing Officer, to call in Billy Goodman Happen and talk about Area 51, and because nobody knew anything about it at the time. This was before coast-to-coast radio, and the switchboard blew up, and they invited Bill back. They invited me and my camera back the next couple of nights, and the show just blew up, and it became a huge hit. And that lasted for about 4.5 years. And then there was so much information with John Lear and Bob Lazar and all these great researchers, just about everybody in the UFO community. And the government got pissed off and blew up the transmitter on Mount Whitney, and the whole show came crashing down, literally. And then Art Bell, who is a fan of the Billy Goodman Happening, saw an opportunity to create Coast to Coast Dreamland. So he grabbed the torch and ran with the format. And here it is, you know, 7 or 8 years later, Coast to Coast is, I think, one of the biggest paranormal shows in the world. And it really spawned a whole generation of movies and videos and TV shows and lots of alien stuff. X-Files came out of that show, and which was a great show. I was supposed to meet Chris Carter several times. And so, yeah, it kind of spawned a legacy, and it was great. It was a great time, lots of exciting things. I got to meet everybody and interview lots of great researchers. And so that we're probably the show has been re-edited and uploaded to a private channel on YouTube. So we probably need to release that to the public, and then everybody can see it. And like this, like that.
Wow, that's cool. So you guys are like the first ones on the scene.
We were. When we got out there, there was nothing out there but a little restaurant called The Little Alien. Actually, it was called Rachel's before it was called The Little Alien. And it was the only place you could go out there and have a sandwich and a drink. And they had memorabilia all over the walls. Pat and Joe were the owners. And we did some interviews there. We made several trips back out there. And it was just a great time. It was an exciting time out there. I mean, you were out there in the middle of nowhere and, you know, waiting to see something come up over the mountain range, because the base is surrounded by a mountain range that's about 1,500 feet tall. And nobody knew anything about it. When we got out there originally, there was a sign out there that said ATC Center, Alien Technology Center. But once it became known and people started going way out there, they took the sign down. And but it spawned a generation of shows, and Independence Day with Will Smith. And I was living with Dan and Peter Aykroyd for a while. And they were really into the subject and doing Ghostbusters, and it was a great time. It's a really good time.
So, Keith, what have you learned about Area 51 you can share with people? Like, what's going on there, and you know, what aliens
well,
are there? What's the government doing?
There's been so many shows since that time. Really good shows. I mean, we were just the ones that pushed the first domino over. And there was George Knapp, who hosts Coast to Coast. He was doing his Best Evidence series through Channel 13, Channel 13 News out in Las Vegas. And so he actually, him and John Lear and Gene Huff went out there before, they got out there before we did. And he produced a series called Best Evidence. You know, which was short news clips, and he did a great job, and he does a great job on Coast to Coast. He subs for George Norrie and others, but he's a really great researcher, and he was a news anchorman, and it was all coming together at the same time, and Billy Goodman's show was. Became a hit overnight, and you know, they did a lot of stealth technology out there, a lot of saucer technology. There was Bob Lazar, the scientist that worked out there, and you know, he did a video, a propulsion video, I think it might be on YouTube, and where he actually worked on the crafts and worked on you know, there was this little fuel, this element called Element 115, and a little stamp-sized piece of it could power one of the crafts for, like, you know, 100 years or something. And he's at the chalkboard, and he could, you know, he explained how the drive mechanisms worked. And if you ever get a chance to see it, it's called the propulsion video, Bob Lazar. I think I might have seen a clip of it on YouTube before. But yeah, it was a lot of testing and a lot of groundbreaking stuff. There's a whole underground facility underneath Groom Lake, and it's it goes a mile down, and there's people sign 3 to 5 year contracts to go underground and do all the stuff that they're doing underground. And there's basically what looks like shopping malls underneath there. And guys sign 3 year contracts not to come up to the surface, except for maybe Christmas. They get to go and see their family. And they're still doing stuff out there, but I don't think they're doing any saucer technology out there anymore. That went away a long time ago. When it hit the media, there were so many people going out there that they changed their location and they moved it further out into the desert. I'm not exactly sure where, but yeah. So
that's cool, Keith. Go ahead, Kelsey. Did you just want to say something?
Yeah, one of the individuals that was in the documentary that you originally did was Billy Meyer. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Billy Meyer, he's out of Sweden or Switzerland, and he's probably the most contacted human being by ETs on record. There's lots of stuff about him on YouTube. And he had beings following him his whole life. And he, I think he knew Saddam Hussein. He used to be in Iraq and Iran. And there's these old black and white pictures of him as a kid in these different countries. And in almost all the pictures, you see a saucer, no matter where he is up in the sky, following him. And he, in 1974-75, was Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens went out there with Lee Elders and Bruce McAbee, or Don Elders, Lee Elders. And they stayed with him for months, reviewing pictures, saucer footage, metal samples, sounds, everything to authenticate his case. And they brought everything back. This was before YouTube, PCs, and before Photoshop. So he had no way of faking this stuff. Have you guys ever seen any of the footage from out there on YouTube?
Yeah, I've seen it.
There was a whole lot on the documentary of yours that we saw too.
Yeah, there was just some little clips at the very end, but there's hours and hours of that footage on YouTube. I think if you go on YouTube, you put the Meyer Chronicles. And, I interviewed Wendell Stevens back then, and he was a straight shooter, he was a lieutenant colonel, and he would be sitting at the dinner table with Billy having dinner, talking, and then Billy would get this strange look in his eyes, and he'd stand up and say, "We must go outside right now." And they'd go out there, and in about 10-12 minutes, a whole little squadron of saucers would come up and start doing a show for them, flipping end over end, going up and down, weaving back and forth. And he personally witnessed this like on a half a dozen occasions, and in just really detailed description of everything. And so he was a straight shooter. He was a guy that never told stories. He was very professional researcher, and I think he had the most biggest UFO collection in the world. He had collected thousands of pictures from all over the world, and people would send him things. And but the Meyer case, you know, a lot of people try to debunk it and say it was he faked everything, but he was married for quite a while, and when he got divorced, I think, I'm not sure, sometime in the 90s he got divorced, and his wife came out, it was a bitter divorce, and slammed him and said he faked everything, and he had models and all this BS. He did have models of the crafts, but he did it to try and fake the camera to see if he could, you know, fake the camera. And IBM was just coming out with their computers with Bruce McAbee, and they would feed the images into the early IBM computers, and every time they fed in one of the fake shots that they tried to replicate from the real ones, the computer would pick up on something that was wrong with it. So that's all they were doing, was trying to prove their case. But, you know, the ships were capable of time travel. And one of my favorite parts of the story is that Billy, well, he always wanted to see what the Earth looked like with dinosaurs on it, and the ships were capable of time travel. And so on occasions, they would take him up in the ships, and he would take his 35-millimeter camera and take pictures. There used to be two moons in our orbit next to the Earth. And there's a montage of photos on YouTube. If you just go in and put Billy Meyer photos, there's entire videos of some of these pictures that were published. And again, this stuff was all in mid-1970s. So, you know, there's like close-up pictures of Saturn and, you know, different planets. And there's no way he could have gotten those pictures unless he was up there. And there's a couple of really eerie shots of he wanted to see what dinosaurs looked like. And there's a famous brontosaurus shot and a pterodactyl shot. And he took a picture of these. And they look very eerie. You know, it's you look at it and you go, wow, you know, could that be real? And, like, again, he had no way to really fake those pictures. And so I guess he went back in time when there was, you know, there was dinosaurs still living on the Earth at the time. And he took some pictures of them. And I always wanted to see those pictures. A lot of the pictures he had in photo albums that he never would release because he, the Pleiadians that commonly visited him were from the Pleiades, and they would talk about a different history other than Christianity and different religions that would not coincide with the way those religions were written. And he had at least 16 to 18 attempts on his life, people trying to shoot him over religious beliefs. And I guess they protected him. But there's another interesting, really interesting thing about the case. And there's a series of notes called the Meyer Chronicles. Yeah, I think the Meyer Chronicles, and it's his conversations that he had with the Palladians, and they could speak any language, and each volume is like 10,000 pages, and there's three different volumes, so there's 30,000 pages. I found one of the volumes online, and it was 10,000 pages, and you read just a couple of chapters of this stuff, and, you know, whoever wrote it, it was like Gene Roddenberry or better, you know. I mean, they went into detailed history of the planets and how long the Earth's been around. And there was a book that was published in the 60s, I think it was around 1960, called Urantia, and it's spelled a little different than U-Ranch, and it's 2,010 pages. If you guys can ever get a copy of that book, there's no known author, and it goes into really detailed history of the planets, the universe, the galaxy, and the Earth being a showpiece of the galaxy. And the story goes that the Intergalactic Council wanted to give the humans a detailed history, even more detailed than the Bible, about the history of the Earth and how it came to be and everything. So they created this book called Urantia. But the Urantia book had nothing to do with the Billy Meier case. But it's a really interesting book. I have not read it, only parts of it. My mother read the whole thing, and it's out there, and it's really interesting that they, out of all the names in the cosmos, they could name the Earth. They named the Earth Urantia, and Keith Rancha. But actually, when that name came about, I didn't know about the book, so it's kind of interesting, the correlation on it. But So, it was a lot of fascinating stuff.
Keith, do you know what what Bill said the intent of the Pleiadians was that came to see him? Like, what was their purpose to, with the interactions that he had with them?
He got asked a lot, why him? Why is he the human that, you know, they would come and visit? Out of all the people they could visit, and they visited a lot of people, but why they trusted him so much. And the reason that he gave was that he had Larian blood, which was a descendant of their race. I don't know if he had a regular human blood type, but he had Larian blood in him. And so he was like a cousin to them. And that's why they paid a lot of attention to him, and, you know, having conversations. And I believe the story. I mean, I'm, you know, from all my interviews that I did back then, you know, I reserved 5% because I wasn't there and I didn't get to see the ships myself. But through interviewing, you know, some high-level people that were out there, you know, you get a sense of when someone's in front of you, whether they're telling the truth or not. And the hardest thing for most people to accept is if you've never seen a craft or never seen something that's non-human, you know, you have that doubt in your mind, you know, is it real or is it faked? Is it not? You know, not happening, or people just making up stories. And, you know, if you stay in it long enough, you know, you might see some saucers. I saw my first one out at Catalina Island, 38 years ago or something like that. And in the documentary that I did, we got some footage from a naval helicopter taking daytime footage of this saucer flying over Catalina Island in broad daylight, and we included that clip in the documentary. It's probably, could pull it up on YouTube now. I mean, there was no YouTube or anything like that back when we did all this stuff, so it's really nice to have YouTube if they don't omit everything, you know. There's videos that show up. There's a great video that I stumbled across. There's Google Earth, you know, the camera that you can zoom in on things. And then there's Google Mars. And this guy was scanning Mars, and he just started zooming in, and pretty soon you see this little tiny white dot. It doesn't even look like anything. I don't even know how he saw it. And as he's zooming in, he's talking about the surface of Mars, and pretty soon it's starting to look like a building, And then it starts looking like a well-maintained facility, like a parking structure. And it's really interesting. If you go on YouTube, you could put in Mars structure on Mars or something like that, and you might see it. It's kind of a blurry, blurred out picture, the static shot of it. It's kind of squared up, and you could try putting in Mars base, and it's kind of a blurry looking picture with squares in it. If you want to watch it, but it's a fascinating find that this guy found. And so anyway, lots of good stuff on YouTube. Are you guys still there?
Yeah. So Keith, back to the Pleiadians, do you know why they came to Earth? What was their purpose of coming here? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't just come to take Bill Myers to see the dinosaurs. You know, like, what was their intent?
He conveyed on a couple of times that they came here to warn us that our technological advances would surpass our spirituality and we would be headed long into just self-destruction. You know, and if you look at the way technology is going now and how fast it's moving, it's pretty scary, you know. But they were here to teach, spread the word of be kind and spiritual, love each other, and, you know, be more into the spiritual aspect of life rather than technological aspect, because they said technology would be our doom, our demise to self-destruct. And if you look at how quick technology's moved, and you know, we're headed in that direction. And just look at the nuclear thing that happened in California just a couple weeks ago at San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant. I mean, do you want to talk about that for a second? San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant has been a power plant that's been in California for a long time, and it got decommissioned 6 years ago. And Southern California Edison got the contract to tear it down. And in doing so, they removed some of the highly radioactive waste and put it in 55-gallon barrels. And they were going to ship the barrels to New Mexico, the way I understand. And then New Mexico said, no, we don't want it. You keep it. And this stuff has a half-life of like 80,000 years. And nobody knows what to do with it. And so they had a big problem. So I don't know why they did it, but they took the barrels, over 200 of them, and stuck them on the beach where a great beach is. And about 100 feet from the shoreline, which is absolutely insane, to stick highly radioactive waste in barrels next to the shore where salt water is. And the barrels, from what I understand, are not up to code. The barrels in Japan are 2 inches thick, and these are, I think, less than an inch thick, so they're not rated very long. And people up there and surfers have been really squawking and raising Cain about the danger and the insanity of sticking this stuff on the beach. So Southern California Edison got the bright idea to start burying the barrels in the sand, which is absolutely insane. I don't know what they were thinking, or if the NRC nuclear regulatory was keeping an eye on them, obviously not. And they started burying the barrels in the sand. And once you bury them in the sand, getting them out of the sand is almost impossible without damaging them. So 2 weeks ago, their workers were moving some of the barrels, and I guess one of them almost fell off an 18-foot platform and hit the ground. And luckily it didn't, because if that thing would have broken open, I think the entire Southern California coast would have had to have been evacuated at least 200 miles in any direction. And I don't know what they think they'd do with 25 million people jumping on the freeway. You know, it's just, it's absolutely insane. So one of the workers went home and talked to his 14-year-old daughter, and she told her dad he had to blow the whistle. And he said, yeah, I'm going to lose my job, though. And she said, Dad, this is our life. You know, you have to, this is really serious. So it hit the press pretty big in local Southern California news, Los Angeles Times, Orange County Register last week, the beginning of the week. And I don't think it's made a national news yet. But it's one of the biggest stories that we have right now, because literally if one of those barrels explodes or breaks open, or I don't know how they're going to get them out of the sand now. I mean, how do you take a bulldozer and just start guessing, you know, where to scoop these things up at? You know, it's just crazy. So that's the NRC has ordered a full-scale investigation, and there's a gal named Donna Gilmore who's been screaming at the NRC for years. She's like a private citizen. She knows more about the barrels, the waste, and everything than the heads at the NRC. And I spoke with her a couple of weeks ago, and for about an hour and a half on the phone, and she scared the living daylights out of me. So it's a really serious problem, and I'm not sure what's going to be done about it, but people need to know about it. All the local papers from, oh, say Mexico all the way down to, you know, a couple hundred miles in towards the west have printed stuff. If you go on Google or DuckDuckGo, you can put in San Onofre whistleblower and just pages and pages of things come up. And the guy, I forget, that blew the whistle, I don't remember his name, but he submitted a video. So if you go on YouTube and pull up San Onofre nuclear accident near miss, you might get to see the video of him blowing the whistle. But I think that's one thing that the Palladians were talking about. You know, our technology has surpassed our spirituality, and, you know, can't they think of a better way to turn a turbine and boil water than putting the most toxic volatile elements on the earth together that would never be together anytime existing in nature? You know, this is insanity. And so I think that's some of the stuff the Palladians were warning us about in the 70s. And they weren't kidding. I wish they'd come down and pick up a load of it and just, you know, take it into outer space and neutralize it in some way.
Yeah, it's obvious that nuclear power doesn't make sense, especially considering, you know, the Pleiadians, like you said, they have that tiny little element that could power their crafts for years. And, you know, we already have, you know, free energy here that being suppressed by the authoritarians, and yeah, so much going on does not make any sense. And thanks for sharing, Keith.
Yeah, so there was another. Go ahead, Kelsey.
No. Go ahead, Keith. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
Okay, I just had to. I had to step out for a minute because a couple of spaceships landed on the roof. So I didn't catch everything that took place in the last 20 minutes or so, but I was just going to ask you to eventually talk about your friend that you mentioned a little bit to us about that had some experiences with the reptilians coming to him in the physical whenever you get a chance.
We'll see. Maybe I could get together some more material for that. Maybe on the next round. That's a pretty deep topic. And hey, maybe I'll talk to him. He's tired now, but he's probably one of the foremost authorities on reptilians in the world. And he's quite an interesting guy. And he's having a few issues right now. And but it'd be great to have him guest appear. He hasn't been on the radio in a long time. There was a show out of Anaheim, California, back in the 90s. See, it was around 88. Maybe 87. Gosh, we're going back. And I did the last show with him, and he got visited by some government MIB people, and they threatened him, and they told him that he wasn't going to talk about that subject anymore at all, or they're going to come back and take care of him. And he got really mad, and he called me up and he said, "We're doing one more show and that's it. I'm going to let it fly." And boy, what a show it was. Trying to remember the call letters to that show. But it was a great show, and he's been in retirement for a long time. But if people want to go see a fairly decent website on the subject, they can go to reptoids.com, to John Rhodes, who's a guest on Coast to Coast now and then, and John's kind of kept the subject alive. There was one more piece of good news for the people last week. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against smart meters. I don't know how many people know about smart meters, but it's the meter on the side of your house that regulates your electricity. And at any given time of day, whether you flip on a can opener, a blender, some sort of appliance, they can tell what you're doing at what time and where you're at in the house, and it's an invasion of privacy. And some people sued, and it's been a long-running case, and they finally ruled, the Seventh Circuit Court, that that smart meters, the Constitution awards us the right to privacy in our home, in our business, guarantees our privacy. And so they sued for a breach of constitutional privacy, and they won. I think the case has been running 7-8 years. It's been a long case, and I don't know if the power company is going to appeal it up to the Ninth Circuit Court. But they won. And last week it was, you can probably pull this up on a browser. You would put smart meter wins case, a Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal, invasion of privacy, and something like that, and I'm sure you'll find it. But they upheld the Constitution and upheld people's right to privacy. Now, I don't know if that means that in that particular state that the court ruled on, the power companies are going to have to start uninstalling smart meters, because not only do they pose a threat in invasion of privacy, but they produce microwaves. And about every 20 seconds, it pulses a microwave that communicates with your neighbor's meter, and it goes all the way down to the end of the block. But these microwaves are really damaging people in their homes. People are laying in their beds, and they're getting microwaved, and they end up with serious neurological issues and sciatica and brain fog and all kinds of things, and they don't know what's hitting them. They don't know why they're sick. And they go to the doctor, and the doctor has no clue what's going on, and he just wants to give them more prescriptions of Prozac or whatever they want to hand out, like jelly beans, and they get sicker, you know. And so it's been a really big burning issue, but I think they were smart to go after the invasion of privacy, because proving the physical harm would have been a much taller order. So they went after the constitutional rights of privacy and won. So I don't know if the power company is going to appeal that and take it all the way up to the Supreme Court, but we'll see what happens. But that might be something for your listeners to check out, because it was a big win for people that want to keep privacy. You know, they can tell what lights you're turning on, what you're doing in your house, and that's important.
Keith, you're very sensitive to the EMFs. You can tell the difference in the houses you go into, the areas. Can you talk about your journey with your EMF sensitivity and how it's affecting all of us on the planet now, just like how you brought up about the smart meters as an example?
Oh, boy. It's been hell. There's a growing number of people out there from all over the world that are becoming electromagnetic sensitive. And it still is relatively unknown in America. There's different countries that are much more involved with it, like Canada. They call it University of Canada is really involved in people that are getting overexposed to radiation through cell phones, smart meters, Wi-Fi, different lines of electrical power, dirty electricity, RF, especially cell phones. Cell phones are extremely dangerous at putting next to your head. In fact, the iPhone came out with a warning, 5 years ago, buried in the instruction never to touch the phone to your ear, because then your head becomes the antenna, and brain cancer has went up, you know, huge percentage in the last 5 to 7 years. So there's warnings buried in the instructions. But electromagnetic sensitivity is where you are under a lot of stress. You're being exposed to chemicals and large doses of radiation and or metals like mercury or lead, and something happens. You might have mercury fillings in your mouth that's also conducting electrical charge, where it feels like you have an antenna coming out of your mouth. And something happens where the bottom drops out, and then you can't be on computers. If the cell phone rings, you get an immediate headache. If you go into like a Starbucks or a place where there's a lot of Wi-Fi and computers and cell phones, it feels like your skin is crawling. And it happened to me, and I've been suffering from it for 2 years. It was kind of slow moving, and you get tremors and you get shaking. I had this internal shaking for 2 years. It feels like kind of like you're really, almost like you have stage fright times three. And it feels like a tremendous, terrible anxiety and a weakness and shaking. And you have to try and, one of the only things I've found so far that helps is grounding, getting down to the beach, getting your feet in the sand, staying away from all electronics, and trying to find a place that's free of Wi-Fi, which is really tough to do. But we live in Huntington Beach, and there's some spots in Huntington Beach where there's little to no Wi-Fi down at the water. And if people want to look it up, they can go on YouTube and put in electromagnetic sensitivity danger or damage or something like that, and have a lot of videos to watch. There's a doctor named Dr. Elizabeth Plourde, P-L-O-U-R-D-E, and she's an EMF doctor who also suffered from electromagnetic sensitivity, and she talks about the damage that the cell phone radiation and smart meter radiation does to the brain and what it actually does to the cells in the brain. And, you know, and so she goes into detail. She suffered from it. And she had, she told me that she had her doctors put these thermal patches that you normally put on your back for heat, put them on her face for some reason, and all the mercury in her mouth drained, and she was sick, really sick the next day for months and months and months. Couldn't get out of bed and could barely even function. And then her legs broke out into these bloody blisters up and down her legs, and she was just a mess. And but it took her about, I think she said, between a year and a year and a half of grounding at the beach every other day for 2-3 hours a day, and staying off of all electronics. I've been trying to stay away from the computer the best I can, and I got these grounding pads that help out. They plug into your ground in your wall socket, and I don't take cell phone calls anymore. Rarely do I. If I take a call, it's on the speakerphone, and I get the phone way away from me. But if I take a call on the phone in the car or something, I immediately get a nasty headache, and I start shaking, and it's terrible. She told me that, Dr. Plourde told me that that she gets calls from all over the world from her YouTube videos of people that have become electrosensitive. And they're in such despair that they say if she doesn't help them get well, they're just going to, you know, do themselves in. And they're just so desperate. I'm supposed to talk to a guy who's got electrosensitivity. I think he's a millionaire. And he's got a mansion. I'm not sure what state he's in. I'm going to probably get to talk to him this week. And he has to sleep in his car because whatever is in his house electronically, he can't stand. And it's become a huge issue. I think we're going to see more and more of this. And hopefully we can fend off them rolling out the 5G network because that's really going to put people over the edge. That's just a completely different signal, completely different wavelength. And the stuff that I'm reading and hearing about it is so dangerous. I mean, they want to put antennas, repeating antennas every 200 feet everywhere. And the fact is they've never tested any of the Gs, G networks, you know, 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. They've never tested them on humans. No testing at all on the safe and efficacy of these networks and these electronic fields and what they do to human cells. So we're going to have to pay attention and maybe do some more shows on that stuff. California had a bill, a 5G network bill, about 5 or 6 months ago, and we flooded Jerry Brown's office with calls protesting against it, and even some people were threatening lawsuits against the governor's office if he signed it. And with 20 minutes to go, Jerry Brown vetoed the bill. So we kind of dodged that one in the very last minutes. I think they sent him some videos to show him how bad it was and the harm that it was going to cause people and the fact that they were going to sue the governor's office and him personally if he allowed this to happen. And so, but that's not going to stop the major telecommunications companies. So we really have to be vigilant and pay attention to what's going on with the 5G network, because some people have told me they've already started rolling it out in other states. I haven't confirmed that, but I wouldn't doubt it at all. So we have to be vigilant about that one, because if that goes online, I can't even imagine how people, regular people, let alone people with electrosensitivity, are going to do. It's just going to push us over the edge. I mean, there'll be nowhere to go, you know. So.
Yeah, this stuff is very real.
Go ahead, Art.
No, go ahead. Just wanted to make a comment.
Okay,
yeah, this stuff is very real. It's happening.
Yeah, these electronics, you know, they're so entrenched in our lives, and they make it, you know, I mean, it's just part of our life now, but it comes with a cost, you know, and I've been suffering from the cost of it, and it's really tough, you know. I was in a building, upscale apartment building last night with some dinner with some friends, and I turned on my cell phone just to see how many Wi-Fis were in the building. I think they were on the third floor, and I got 32 Wi-Fi signals, strong signals into my phone with like 3 or 4 bars, and I was like, oh my God. And the guys that I was having dinner with were both sick. One had just gotten back from emergency, and he, out of nowhere, feels like his skin's crawling, and then he has a hard time breathing, and he actually had to call the ambulance, and they got him in there, and, you know, they didn't know what to do. They did some scans and ran some tests, but they don't, electrosensitivity isn't really recognized in America yet, but a growing number of people are getting it, because radiation is accumulative. When you are on the cell phone for a long period of time and your ear heats up, or that side of your head heats up, that's radiation going directly into your brain and destroying cells. And when you listen to Dr. Elizabeth Plourde talk about what it does to the brain, it's horrifying, especially with small children. Children should not have cell phones. Even Steve Jobs, Apple computer, who died of pancreatic cancer, would not let his own children have an iPad or iPhone, ever. And I think he was aware of the danger of the stuff that he was inventing or bringing to market anyway. He didn't invent the iPhone or iPad. Somebody else did. But, yeah, there's a cost. And actually, there's a new phone that's coming out, and a friend of mine's involved with the companies that are doing it. It's kind of a green phone. I have to learn more about it to be able to talk about it even more, but it's a phone that's works a little bit differently than a cell phone. It's more like a walkie-talkie transmission. It ties into the existing network, but you buy the phone, and it's about half the cost of an iPhone. You buy the phone one time, and then there's never any phone bills. And they say they're hooked up with an EMF company, electromagnetic field company, that it comes equipped with neutralizers. you know, I think there's stickers that are placed inside the phone that neutralize any harmful effects from the transmission. But I need to find out more about it. And the phones are going to be encrypted, so nobody will just be able to hack into them. I'm sure there'll be hackers that will try and maybe eventually achieve being able to do that, but they're going to be encrypted. So there's a lot of excitement about this phone. As I learn more about it, I'll share it with you guys. And hopefully they'll have some financing with it so people can afford it. I think, didn't the new iPhone just come out recently?
I think the latest model right now is the iPhone X, with the face recognition sign-in feature thing. Yeah.
Isn't it about $1,200?
Oh, something like that. Yeah. Most
I think it's about $1,400.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and people go on 3 to 6 year payment plans to get it. Like they pay $30
yeah.
a month with their bill towards the purchase of the phone. So I mentioned that to the inventors and the owners of this new company, and they're going to explore some financing options. So as we get closer to that, I'm definitely going to want to try one. And there's an app that everybody should know about, and it's called JustGetFlux, FLUX.com, and you download it, and it turns your screen orange, an orange colored, and gets rid of the blue screen, the harmful effects of the blue rays into your eyes, which is damaging people's eyes. And damaging people's pineal gland in the middle of their forehead. And Dr. Jack Cruz, who is a neurosurgeon, you can pull him up on YouTube. He goes into great detail at what this blue light does, not only to damaging your eyes and your retina. He goes into the aspects of how all these blue screens from your PC, your laptop, and your cell phone damages the pineal gland, and that particular area of the brain is damaged. And so we just have to be really diligent and careful. And, you know, with the internet, there's no reason to be naive out there. Lots of information flowing. So the app that everybody can get for free is Just Get Flux, FLUX.com. And I went to the PCS Metro store today to try and fix the problem of my phone not accepting it, and I guess I didn't have enough gigabytes left for the app, so they transferred some of my photos and video to the chip, the card that's in the phone, and it created some more space. So I got just enough space to download the app, and I got the app in, but now my phone, being 4 years old, won't work with the app. Go figure. So I'm probably going to have to get a new phone, which I've been trying to stay away from. Everybody usually wants to get a new phone every 2 years, but if I get used to a phone and I know how it works, I don't really like changing it because I don't use my phone for calls much anymore. I just try to keep my exposure down and get out in the surf like Kelsey does every day. Did you go out today, Kelsey?
I definitely got my feet in the water today. We were dealing with some very interesting matters with the Constitution here, and like you brought up about the court. So it was all right, though. The water, it's definitely gotten colder, cooler, but it's still fine. And it's once you get in, it's nice. It's real good. So Did you want to talk about what you, your health products on this show, Keith, or did you want to do another show with us? You know a lot about.
Yeah,
ozone.
I think another night would be good. I'm a little tired tonight. I called you earlier to see if we could get on earlier, and then I couldn't get you on the phone, so I went ahead and had dinner and feeling a little low, a little under the weather today.
Well, thanks for coming on, Keith. Thanks for doing the hour with us, and we'll do it again.
Did we finish an hour?
Yeah, it sure has. It's been an hour.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, well, we'll share it around on Facebook and YouTube and SoundCloud. Yeah. That was really fun.
Yeah. So how are you guys finding ways to advertise and get the show out there?
Yeah, if everybody listening to this right now would share it around, and you can also check out our sponsors and our affiliates when you go to healthawareness.strikingly.com. Or check out my YouTube channel, which is Kelsey Lynn Brown, Lynn with an E. We have a wide variety of affiliates that have to do with the John Ellis water we are selling here, along with the Megaspore probiotic blue light blocking technology software, fluoride, chlorine shower filters, and a whole lot more. So anybody listening, if you would please share this around, and you'll hear Keith again when we come on next time, and he's going to talk about his health products, and he knows a lot about ozone. He knows a whole lot about getting yourself detoxed and healthy and cancers and all sorts of interesting things. So we'll just end that
I will save the books that I've been involved with maybe on the next show, but yeah, they could check out, the John Ellis water. You guys gave me some the other night, and I drank at least a half a glass. And, oh, wow. God, the next morning I woke up, I was like, woo! I had some really exciting dreams and bizarre dreams. And I think I woke up at like 4:30, 5 in the morning full of energy. It was like it really stimulated my brain.
That's
John
great.
Ellis water.
Yeah, we're going to be selling it. We'll even ship it across the United States. I created a website. It's johnellishb.strikingly.com for anybody listening. If you want to go check out John Ellis, hb.strikingly.com, and there's a 16-minute video on there that explains this water, and Keith is the testimonial here. And
I'm the human guinea pig.
Well, it looks
I'm the
like
human guinea pig of all time.
Well,
no, I you don't have to drink much of this water. I mean, it's very powerful, and it seems to really stimulate your immune system and your blood. It seems like it puts oxygen in the blood some way.
Yeah, what it actually does is it changes the hydrogen bond angle of water, so it helps circulate blood, and hydrate circulate the blood to the extremities of the body to hydrate it. And 4 gallons of it actually can clean a well for 4 to 6 years, and there's some great testimonials out there about this water, so it's really cool. It's helping you out, and we'll have to give you some more.
You mean it like, in terms of cleaning a well, it like gets rid of bacteria and parasites and things that you don't want in your well?
Yeah, exactly. If you pour 4 gallons in, that well will stay clean, like pure clean water for 4 to 6 years.
Wow. That's quite a statement.
Yeah.
How are we doing on time? Are we at the hour mark?
Well, I see that there is a call-in, a caller number. Is the caller there, 201 area
yes.
code? Are you there?
Yes, Kelsey. It's me, Andrea.
Oh, hey, Andrea.
Hey, thank you for sending this info to me.
Do you have any questions for Keith or anything you want to share? This guy knows everything.
Yes. Well, no, it's just something that you guys were talking about water. And a few days ago, I was fasting, and I noticed something in my body. Like, I wasn't really drinking any water, but when I started eating, I found out that because of the amount of sugar that I was consuming, you know, it was like asking me to like actually drink water, because I didn't, you know, I didn't need water before, but I started like using water after having that much sugar in my body. So I don't know, I just wanted to share that because you guys were talking about water. But I did not hear much about the, you know, the talk about, I know about cell phone and radiation, and there's a new phone I heard that's coming out. But I'm here with Eric.
Patty. Hey. So I want some information from my peers, some opinions. I've been thinking lately about time travel and multiple realities and sort of a fractal system of like how choices create new timelines for people, and how to interact with those timelines and find optimal ones to connect with. And I was wondering, first of all, does that sound like anything familiar to you guys?
Are you familiar with the Philadelphia experiment?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that was, I think it came out in 83, the movie, but my step-grandfather, Alfred Bielek, was one of the project directors on the experiment. He was one of the two guys that jumped overboard and went through the time tunnel.
That's wonderful.
It's a fascinating subject, and it's really far-reaching. You know, you really have to have an open mind to wrap your head around some of that stuff. But if you want to see some really incredible lectures and interviews that he's done, you can go on YouTube and put in Alfred Bielek, B-I-E-L-E-K, and there's dozens and dozens of interviews with him. And I saw and spent a great deal of time with him, and a lot of events happened, and I won't go into that tonight because it's a really heavy subject, but...
I would be very interested in having a further discussion about that subject, because I feel I have questions, but I also feel like I would have a lot to offer as well from my experiments. Yeah.
Oh, you've done some experiments with time?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about things, and then I've been also trying to come up with practical experiments that we could have as individuals at home to see if it works, and then if it does work, what benefits can we draw, and how will the benefits affect our individual time streams, reality tunnels. I mean, there's different labels we can put realities, individual paths, I guess would be another one, but how can we affect that? And then I also want to go into, like, what are the ethical implications of affecting our own time streams I don't know.
You mean
that's
the
something
timelines?
That's been on. What?
You mean the timelines?
Yes.
Yeah, Alfred used to talk a lot about that. He passed away. I'm thinking about five or six years ago, and but he was around for a long time. Because have you seen the film Philadelphia Experiment?
No, I have not.
Oh, you need to rent it and see it. You might be able to see it on YouTube.
I've
think the original
about the Philadelphia Experiment, and I've read like the stories that people have had about it, but I haven't seen
You should watch the film. Yeah, you should watch the film, the Hollywood film. And it's a pretty good film. There was a second one that came out that wasn't as good as the first one.
Was it
and
a
people
science
got,
fiction sort of thing or drama or the film?
It was kind of it was kind of both, really.
Yeah.
But Alfred said that the original film that came out was about, I think he said about 90% of what really happened. You know, as far as what they portrayed in the film, 90% correct.
My favorite story from the Philadelphia Experiment was something I heard about someone stepping foot on Mars through some sort of dimensional gate, and that makes me think more. So there's realities. But in time, but also in space, and I believe that was an that's one aspect that I would like to understand more at some point.
If you want to look into the Mars stuff, Richard Hoagland has been around for a long time, and I think his website is missionenterprise.com. Just try to look up Richard Hoagland and go to his website. He's probably the most comprehensive researcher on the cities of Cydonia, the pyramids, the incredibly large face monument, and the cities and the roads that all form a perfect tetrahedron and pi in mathematics. And he's done an extensive 30-some years amount of research and photographs, and he's the guy to go and see.
Do you remember, I just remembered it now, and it's beautiful that I did, because I've been having trouble remembering the name, Project Camelot. Does that ring a bell at all?
Yeah.
Yeah? They would do videos, and this had to have been like 6 to 8 years ago, because they were using Google Video and they were doing interviews from people who had firsthand experience from stories of these things that I suppose we cover. But I wanted to share that because I just now remembered the name of the website, and I for maybe 3 years I've been trying to remember that, and I just wanted to share. But that was
good.
Where I had first heard of Manheim Project. That was probably where I first heard of that back in the day.
Yeah, see, all this good energy that's coming out tonight sparked your memories.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, they did a good job. They interviewed everybody.
It was an Englishman. What was that? Sorry?
I'm trying to remember the name of the gal that hosted those shows for Camelot. Her name slipped in my mind, but she had a sidekick. And she, for years, interviewed all the top heavyweight people.
And they did a whole different, like, many, many different sorts of stories and viewpoints. And some of them were very beautiful, very, like, very much so from the heart. And then some were more science oriented, some were more like they it was a wide spectrum of people they interviewed, But I remember that triggered my memory.
I saw her out at the Conscious Life Expo last year.
Is that Carrie Cassidy?
Yes, thank you, Carrie. I saw Carrie, and I went out and introduced myself because I'd never met her, but I had seen a bunch of her interviews and Camelot shows, and we had a nice chat, and I told her a little bit about how Area 51 and Coast to Coast and all that stuff got started, because we were there in the beginning, and she wanted me to call her and maybe do a show or interview with her, but it didn't happen. But yeah, she did a lot of great work.
Yeah, another thing that you could do, sorry, I forgot your name, Cola, was it Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could look at the, or read the book, a new book 3, The Real Far Country by Dwayne the Great Writer. And it's a really cool read. It's Dwayne and Paul Twitchell being taught by Ray Bizarre Tarr, the real universal guide about time and space and the different levels and dimensions of life and how it all works. It's really, really cool. You can find that on our website, wonderfulworldwideeducators.com. We also have Skype calls, 3, 4, or 5 times a week where we talk about these kinds of things too. And yeah, you could come along if you enjoy the book, for sure.
Nice. Thank you very much. But, yeah, as of the past 2 weeks or so, time travel has been on my mind, and more so from an individual with other versions of oneself, mainly. And then I was like, okay, I can come up with an experiment to test these things out on an individual level, just to prove to oneself, the functionality, or like whether it's worth it or not. But then I was saying, if it does work, what were the ethical implications? And then let's say I do something to benefit myself 1 month ago. Is that self that I am benefiting from, that is, who is 1 month behind me, that I don't believe that's the same me at 1 month ahead. So I think in the end, the conclusion that maybe I'm setting up, which I shouldn't be setting up a conclusion for my experiment now, but I think it would just be for the greater good. It would just be, as long as you're doing good for yourself in the past or in the future, and maybe you'll never find out about it, I think that's good. And, I mean, even if it doesn't work, it doesn't have a function, even as a sort of meditation, I think it would still be beneficial. But that's all the stuff that's going on in my head right now. But this is the first time I'm putting it to words, so thank you for having ears for that. But anything you guys can shoot off on that, right? I don't know.
Well, yeah, we see that life is always new now, and it's always here and now. And you can always just do what makes sense and pay attention to what life is showing you now. And, the past is a reference, and the future is, it's going to depend on free will. And because everything has free will here in creation. So yeah, you decide your life. You can decide to agree with whatever you choose to this time and space stuff. But if you just focus on here and now, you just always do what makes sense. It doesn't really matter what happened in the past, but you can use it as a reference to decide to see what makes sense now. Yeah, that's just my view now on that.
Nice.
It reminds
me. Sounds good to me.
Okay, we've got a concur from the expert.
Nope,
just
continuing to learn, that's all.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's why I value so much from this opportunity, just to throw some ideas out. And because, someone can offer the one little part that you're missing. Just, you know, I don't know. So I value this. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Kelsey, are we going past our hour?
Well, we have gone past the hour. So we can just wrap it up. What's that?
Oh, nothing.
Did you want to play a song for us? Is that what that was, Keith? Are you singing?
No, gosh, I haven't played in a while. I gotta get some little bit more handle on this electro sensitivity thing, and then maybe I'll start shredding again.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, does anyone play guitar on the line?
Yeah, we do, but it's late.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Kelsey, it was great getting to talk with you guys. And we'll do it again soon.
Yeah,
I
got to
get
you.
Some
thanks.
More of that Ellis's water, and then maybe we'll do some shows, get some updates going. And we got to really, I'm going to try and get some people from the NRC on the phone tomorrow, because this nuclear issue we have in our backyard is really serious. Kind of worried about it. But I might have an answer for it with this genius inventor that I'm working with. And I'm hoping he gets back. He's out of the country right now solving someone else's nuclear problem. And then when he gets back, I got to get him in touch with the people with the NRC as fast as possible, because having these barrels on the beach and then burying them is just, it's insanity. So, you know what we should do, Kelsey? We should try and make some calls this week if you want to engage and call Channel 2479 and tell them to pick up on this story. It's bigger than any story out there right now, that Southern California has barrels next to the water containing the highest hazardous radiation on the planet, and they're burying these things in the sand. I mean, it doesn't get any worse. So maybe we got to get on the phone and start getting some national media about this. So, with that, I bid everybody a good night, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Keith. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks,
nice
man.
Meeting you.
Good night.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, if anybody is still on the line, I just want to let y'all know that you can go to wonderfulworldwideeducators.com/store, and you can purchase the new books by Dwayne the Great Writer and get yourself out of time, space, creation, and learn about the real universes of real freedom. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Please share this show. Have a good night.